Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this Tuesday, March the 22nd, 2022, 3/22/22, 13 minutes past the hour, and we have got a great guest this hour. So many things going on in the world right now. Certainly, we've all been talking about what's going on in Ukraine. We have a Supreme Court confirmation hearing going on with Judge Brown Jackson, and a couple of long-running syndicated television series have bit the dust as of next fall. We're going to talk about all that with a gentleman I like a whole lot. He has been on this show several times, although I don't think he's been on since late last summer, which is too long. We're so glad to welcome him back. He was at the helm of a very popular syndicated television series from September of 1998 through May of 2003. That is 15 seasons. That is no mistake. What a pleasure and privilege it always is to welcome to these microphones Judge Joe Brown. Judge, how are you?
How are you? One little correction there. That was 2013, not 2003. That's only 5 years, what you
said. Oh, did I say 2003? I'll have to get the eyes checked out.
Yes, you did. Yeah. Okay.
Judge, I want to start out here in the television field. Obviously, 15 big seasons there. We saw Maury, which had been on for 31 seasons, get the cancellation this past week. As of the fall, they will run through the fall. And Judge Jerry, which is Jerry Springer, had been doing this judge program for the last three seasons. It's canceled as of the fall, and Jerry says he's retiring from television. What do you make of those series going by the wayside?
Well, I didn't watch either one of them, so I can't give a candid opinion as to what they were about. But what I am seeing is Hollywood is into agenda-based programming rather than consumer-based response-type programming. They have an agenda, and they are feeling apparently that they're close to the finish line, so they're pushing it harder. And those two shows, from what I've read about them, are the individuals in question. They don't push the agenda. Now, I'll leave it at that, except it ties into what we see nationally. It goes to, since you talked about Uganda,
Ukraine.
The Ukraine, see, one of the problems with Ukraine is that it used to be the Ukraine in terms of a geographic area, like the Appalachians or the Rockies. And as we know, there's no state called the Rockies. There's no state called Appalachia. It's a region. So what was a region became made into a state. And they divided it up wrong, and there's some ethnic groups in there that don't like what's happening. Like one of them, for example, they had a large contingency of Africans who had settled there back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Both the U.S. and the Soviet Union were attempting to curry favor in East Africa. That's how Obama's father got brought over on our side. And those Africans, well, their descendants don't exactly like what's been happening to them, and there is a bad problem over there with sex trafficking and sex, outright sex slavery that they get caught in. So a large number of the African descendants are part of the people that were trying to invite Russia in. The other thing is Russia is peddling the justification, which is similar to the one that we had during the Cold War. While we were fighting to preserve the world from communism, Russia is putting it out that it's saving the world from Nazification. And what they're doing is citing the very grave and dangerous thing that we see in mainstream and social media, wherein we have censorship and we have a high propaganda content where the First Amendment is going to hell in this country. And the second, nobody wants that. The fourth, well, the devil with search and seizure consideration some people are harping on now. And the Fifth Amendment, well, that's such a great impediment to accomplishing what one wants. Now, that gets to the next thing that the Russians are propagandizing about, and it deals with a counterpart to our thing about protecting the world from communism. They are trying to protect the world, the way they say it, from the destruction of the traditional nuclear family. And if you look at an American embassy or consulate, anywhere in the world, there's an American flag at the top of the flagstaff, and right below it is a rainbow flag. Actually, that violates American law, since it's supposed to be either a state flag or a national flag from some guest host or recognized institution. So we need to understand what we're doing. Also, transitioning all the way over to the Ukraine, or Ukraine, we have this thing that Russia supplies 30% of the oil that is used in Europe and 40% of the natural gas. And I have a sneaking suspicion that since Biden has long been in the back pocket of big oil, there is a concerted effort to make things a little bit easier for American oil companies to chop Russia out of that. Now, I had some problems with my iPhone yesterday. I don't know if it got cured, but it had to do with the map functions on mine. And I see that there is an announcement out that Apple worldwide is beginning to have problems, and our president, Mr. Biden, made some announcements that he anticipated some cyber attacks from Russia. And I'd like to know, if he had that forenotice, what his administration has done to protect us from that. But apparently nothing. However, are where we are. So it's in a big, hot mess, and we're beginning to show long neglect for our military. The former Soviet Union's main component, Russia, just used operationally some hypersonic cruise missiles, and we don't have anything close to it. We have no defense against it. So what happened with that? We've got M1 Abrams tanks that the latest built were 30-some years ago, and some of the hulls have been stripped down, sandblasted, and rebuilt. We've got the same thing with the M2, M3 Bradleys, fighting vehicles. We've got A-10 Warthogs that some people who are jet jockeys want to replace, that haven't been built new for the same 30-year period, and that's what our ground attack depends on, the AH-64 Black Hawk attack helicopters. They're 30 years old, and Arleigh Burke destroyers that we rely upon. The first ones went into commission 40 years ago, literally, in 1982, and we couldn't afford the ammunition for the three Zumwalt destroyer cruisers that the Navy was trying to get because we wouldn't pay for them. And our Navy is becoming much at a disadvantage when we deal with what's going to happen in the South China Sea. And last year, the Air Force and the Navy issued some white papers saying that if the People's Republic of China decides to invade Taiwan, well, Mr. President, essentially you need to find somebody that can write you a good speech to save face because there's not anything we can do about it. So, outside of going, do not pass go, do not collect $200, go directly to World War III. And I don't think anybody but a damn fool would want that. But we have some problems.
You know, Judge, what's interesting to me, Judge, is since the Ukraine incident has started, we've taken phone calls and let listeners express their opinion on the situation, and 95% of the people who have called in have said unequivocally, let's get involved militarily to stop Russia from what they're doing. This is Adolf Hitler all over again. Putin's crazy. And this is not a liberal area. This is Jim Jordan's congressional area. Trump won this area twice, and politicians in this area are Republican. But they want to go to war. It's interesting.
That's dog whistle. That's dog whistle political responsiveness to propaganda. Actually, most of the world looks at us as being more on the totalitarian side. They're looking at our invasion of what we did with Libya, Mogadishu, down in the Balkans, Iraq, Afghanistan, you drop back to Vietnam. They're looking at us as being an intrusive nation state who wants to jump in everybody else's stuff, supposedly to save them from some horror that actually turns out to be us. Let me say this. Gay people have an absolute right to do what they want to do in their own bedrooms. Get your freak on. However, what I'm saying is the imposition of an official state religion, non-secular religion known as LGBTQ, the cult. Now, as some gay folk, including some that work for me, have said, all gays do not support LGBTQ, just like all Christians did not support Branch Davidian, nor Jim Jones and his Kool-Aid. It's a cult. And a lot of them say some of the things that LGBTQ supports, like pedophile conduct, the transsexual thing, the breakup of the nuclear family, they don't support because they were either victimized by it or they like families. And that is a bad thing. So we have to understand that there's been a massive amount of propaganda by the mainstream media and a lot of social media. And if you look at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, they are so absolute in their lack of tolerance for it, deviation from the party line, so to speak, that you really have no soapbox these days for anybody to speak out, for anyone to express any contradictory ideas. After January 6th last year and what has happened, we find that there's no longer any opportunity to petition the government for redress of grievance. And petition has been long held by our Supreme Court and appellate courts to include demonstrations and protests as well as formal written petitions. So somehow or another, that's to be cut out. And we have no business going over there, because first off, there's the Civil War, and the United States of America set a very strong precedent during our own Civil War about keeping Europe from intervening on one side or the other. And remember, this is a civil war that was started by the Ukrainians themselves, or at least some of them who did not want to stay in the Ukraine and wanted to go back to a relationship with Russia that they had had prior to the breakup of the Soviet Union. So you have to understand that. And the other point is that you've got Biden with Obama. Let's look at the relationships here. Obama's grandfather was first cousin to George Herbert Walker Bush, President George Herbert Walker Bush. So Obama, Bush one, and George Walker Bush are related as family. George Herbert Walker Bush founded Zapata Oil with the financing of George Herbert Walker. That was Uncle Herbie who founded Halliburton. We have a massive, big oil presence in our government right now. And to a great extent, we are looking at something that is not being controlled, but is actually being pushed. These pump prices have no economic justification at all. Supposedly, it's because the price of oil has gone up. But while we whoopee, it takes a minimum of 6 months for a shipment of oil to get from the Middle East to the United States, and about another 6 months for the refined result of that shipment to get into the system. So right now, we have gas that was refined from oil that came in a year ago. So the oil prices at the pump ought to be commensurate with the oil prices from 1 year ago. So I'll give Bill Clinton this. Every time the pump prices wanted to go up, he would threaten to release oil reserves. And we have a rule that when we have any imported oil, a certain percentage has to go into the U.S. oil reserve. Now, the Japanese made a very bad mistake in World War II when they did not bomb the oil fields or the oil storage facilities on Oahu. That's where Pearl Harbor was located, and just concentrated on the obsolescent battleship. There hasn't been any oil put in the storage facilities in Oahu since World War II or before World War II, but there's enough in there to run the U.S. economy at 150% of its current usage for the next 100 years if we never pumped another drop. The United States has the world's largest oil reserves, yet we import almost all of the domestically consumed oil. And the prices are very high. By dint of supply and demand and availability, our gas prices ought to be amongst the cheapest. But my connections from over there are showing me that when you do the currency exchanges and the volume exchanges from liters to gallons, the Russians are paying $1.60, $1.62 per gallon at the pump. For 87 octane, $1.70 something for 89 octane, and for 91.93, they're paying a little less than $2. So we need to look at those things and determine whether or not we're being given a good, reliable diplomatic report, or there's something else going on. Now, I understand the frustration that a lot of people are feeling, and they want to do something, and we've had several years worth of propaganda and behavior where street violence has been condoned. They have attempted to take masculinity out of the home place so the boys don't get proper home training. We've got extreme violence in urban areas and now spreading to more rural or agriculturally oriented areas. And that's a direct product of the suppression of masculinity, because masculinity is a precept, a principle, where when you put it in a boy's head, he grows to be a man who can be brave and courageous when necessary, but otherwise is a preacher of public peace, dignity, and order, and is dedicated to the proposition that it is his responsibility to provide, protect, to sustain, to make where he lives a better, safer, more secure place filled with economic prosperity, sense of purpose, morality, and ethics. And that is not happening. And we've got the effort afoot to impose a cult that is licentious, that has no morality, no principle, no obligations, that would be imposed in the subconsciousness of young boys so that when they grow up, they are dedicated to the proposition that the guy in the mirror tells them every morning when they shave, comb their hair, brush their teeth, or whatever it may be, are you being what you ought to be, not just what you want to be? And we have gotten away from that. We don't have shame and public embarrassment for inappropriate behavior, because, oh my God, somebody may be shamed and get their feelings hurt. We don't have boys learning how to deal with bullies because the parents, the teachers, and the police are supposed to go in and arrest 7- and 8-year-olds because they do what human boys have been doing since time immemorial. Something is wrong with this equation. And we need to become a country once again dedicated to purpose, to obligation, responsibility, and accountability. Otherwise, we are not going to be at the top of the heap much longer. And we've let our educational system go completely to hell. And we've got one thing that is absolutely disgusting: a deviation from principle. Now, we've got the following things that cannot be discriminated against under American law: race, color, national origin, sex, age, medical condition. We have religion. Religion is something of choice, but most people don't get the opportunity to make the choice because mama took you to mosque, took you to synagogue, took you to church when you were still in diapers. And by the time you got old enough to read and write, you were inculcated with that particular religion and you could not change. Well, they've been getting trannies dressed up like girls, tried mama, but making mama look like a harlot. And child psychology has been long clear on the subject. Children are most responsible to mother images until they get about 8. So at 2 years old, you've got these transsexuals reading to the children in the library. When they get 5, you have the same thing in that kindergarten, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th grade. And by the time they get to be sub-teens, they're so inculcated with what is a new secular religion that they're no more capable of questioning it than a Jewish kid is, a Muslim kid is, or a Christian kid is, because they've been inculcated with that particular brand of religion. So they're trying to do that, and they're trying to build up a new ethnic group, which is sexual orientation. Now, I tell people all the time, I said, well, I don't care what you do, but when you do it with your lover, whatever, whomever it may be, do you get raped every time you do it, or do you rape him, or if you're her, is it the other way around? No, it's voluntary. Well, if it's voluntary, it's a choice. And even though a lot of Catholic priests seem to deviate from it, a lot of them choose to be celibate. So we're taking matters of choice that are more properly in the category of the First Amendment, and we're trying to make them an ethnic consideration. And that's not good for the country, because freedom of choice is important. You have your right to do whatever you want to do in your home place, long as you don't hurt anybody. But you have no right to kick the door into our living rooms and come in and confuse our children and try to convert our children. We can't even teach our children what it is to be a heterosexual practitioner. And why the devil would a first grader be getting taught about sex? It doesn't make sense to me. But you see, that's one of the problems with the Ukraine and the trash and the Russians are getting. They have a plan. We better watch out because the People's Republic of China is getting in on that plan, and we've got some hell that we're going to have to deal with in the Pacific, the Northwest Pacific area in the Sea of China. And we are being perceived as on the wrong side of this worldwide. So, I mean, we need to consider it, and the position we're in is much like that of the National Socialist Workers' Party prior to World War II starting when it came to Spain. So we need to check ourselves and stop being so dog whistle responsible. When somebody with the whistle blows it, we come running with our tongues lolling out, tails wagging, wanting a treat.
You know, Judge,
I'm sorry, I don't want to go along with the popular flow, but there's some problems here.
Well, Judge, a story last week that came out of Russia during this was Vladimir Putin put out a list of people who could not come into Russia, Americans. And on that list was President Biden, his son Hunter, and a lot of people in the Biden administration. But a name... Now, there were no former presidents on there, no big officials in the United, former officials on the United, on that list, but a name that was on that list was Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton and the Biden administration and his son. What is that anger that Putin still holds to this day against Hillary Clinton? A person who holds no political position any longer.
Well, you might want to consider that they consider her a war criminal for crimes against humanity relative to her role in, let's say, Libya and some other places as Secretary of State. And again, we have to understand that the United States is viewed as an aggressor, an invader, and a meddler by a large portion of the world. We also have to understand one of the reasons why Biden can't go over there is Russia would have to grant him diplomatic immunity because it has an agreement with the Ukraine, as does the United States, to apprehend and extradite criminal elements that are wanted in the other place. And part of the supreme law of the land consists of treaties that have been ratified. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution says the United States Armed Forces and the Commander-in-Chief have an obligation and duty to, quote, enforce the law of nations, unquote. That's written into the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. And right now, there is a pending multi-count felony indictment naming Joe Biden and Hunter Biden that the Ukraine has outstanding. So that is for subornation of treason, extortion, bribery, and a number of other things that have to do with what Biden got up on stage at a panel discussion on C-SPAN 3 years ago in January and said, I am guilty of bribery. I told them that I was going to cut off their $14 billion loan guarantee if they didn't back this guy off of my son. Now, that got revealed thanks to the Ukrainian Supreme Court as a matter of bribery and treason and extortion and a number of other things, and embezzlement. So we have a president of the United States who is in place to have the constitutional requirements exercised on him and his son and extradited to Ukraine, which is not happening. But we do have this precedent that the Democratic Party set about going after President Trump after he was no longer in office, and returning articles of impeachment. Now, Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution says the president and vice president may be impeached and upon conviction removed from office. And the 12th Amendment says if they are impeached and removed, they can no longer hold a public office for three things: bribery, treason, and the third category is for high crimes or misdemeanors in office. In other words, felonies or misdemeanors in office. So there is a pending set of indictments against the current president for activity when he was a vice president, charging him with felonies and misdemeanors in office. You've got the Democratic Party having set the precedent of we can go after somebody for impeachment and conviction purposes for actions that pertain to an office they no longer hold. And we've got a good problem here. So the Constitution does not require that one be criminally convicted. It's a civil standard of is it more likely than not that someone has committed these criminal acts, misdemeanors and felonies in office. This first category of acts, bribery, is it more likely than not that he's committed them in office? Not beyond a reasonable doubt and to a moral certainty, but simply more likely than not. So we have a situation where they're, well, the polls of the president and vice president are so abysmally low, in fact, the lowest since they've been taking these polls, that in every instance when the administration has such low polls, they always, that is the party of the president, always loses control of whatever house or chamber, rather, of the Congress that they're controlling. So that would mean that the Democrats would lose control of the House, and they technically have no control of the Senate. It actually is 48 Democrats, two independents who caucus together, and 50 Republicans in the U.S. Senate, with the tie broken by Kamala Harris Imhoff, the vice president. And it's likely that the Republicans will pick up senators and certainly take control of the House, so I can see impeachment proceedings against Biden being brought expeditiously, as well as a potential conviction by a majority Republican Senate. So we might have some very exciting things going on. Now, we can transition from that, since we're talking about the Senate being pivotal to this conviction process. And by the way, what happened with Trump is interesting, because in criminal or civil law in America, had the Democrats put on their case against Trump in a court of law, the Trump side would have been entitled to a directed verdict or judgment on the pleadings before you even put the proof on, because the articles of impeachment did not state bribery, they did not state treason, they did not state a crime. It was obstructing Congress, but you see, Congress consists of the Senate and the House of Representatives, so since the Republican-dominated Senate certainly wasn't being obstructed, well, that one went straight out the window from day one, because if one chamber of Congress was not getting obstructed, then there was no obstruction of Congress, and that doesn't state a crime, nor is it bribery, nor is it treason. So that's out, and the other one was the same thing. So this time, though, there will be bribery and felony and misdemeanor charges that would only require a civil standard of proof, more likely than not by the preponderance of the evidence and not beyond a reasonable doubt, to be established for Biden to be out of the picture before his term is up by being successfully impeached and convicted. So we've got some interesting times in front of us. And again, that brings to bear some of those old sayings we have: be careful what you ask for, you just might get it. And I've seen a lot of that in the last few years.
47 minutes past the hour, talking with Judge Joe Brown. Judge, yesterday we saw the Supreme Court confirmation hearings begin with Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, first African-American woman possibly to end up on the Supreme Court. Looks like she'll have the votes regardless. But what do you make of this this judge and this process?
I don't like it. I know some black federal appellate court judges, black female judges, who ought to have been nominated. They're fine judicial officers, well balanced. I know some black judges that I'm acquainted with. They don't like her. One of the things that is a problem is she seems to have an affinity for pedophiles. And I think if there's one category of offender, if convicted, that needs the death penalty, it's pedophile offenders for preying on children. And there are some other things which she has had absolutely zero concern for her people. Now, Thurgood Marshall certainly did. Justice Ginsburg did for women. When you get Jewish judges or appellate judges, they certainly look out for their Jewish brethren. You get Christian ones who look out for their Christian brethren and look out for the United States. Everybody does. But you have somebody here who has demonstrated actually no concern for her own people in the entirety of her judicial or legal career. And I don't like that. Now, I never did like, with due respect, Justice Clarence Thomas because of a number of reasons. I won't detail them right now. But like Thurgood Marshall said, when they asked him on his retirement, he said in his rough, gravelly voice that he declined give the information he had as to who was going to be nominated, but he said this. Let me just say it clearly. He said, a black snake will bite you just as quickly as a white one will. And just because the person has skin color and gender, in this case, it does not mean that you have somebody who is going to do what you think they're going to do. And I have a sneaking suspicion that the liberal side of the equation is going to be, well, let's put it this way. The Democratic Party has been counting on their black voters for a long time. And I don't think the black voters are going to be much satisfied with what they get. I don't think anybody really is. And again, it's part of this cabal, this movement to establish a secular religion. In this case, we've got somebody that has been a staunch and unequivocal supporter of pedophile behavior and conduct and has ruled over and over again in their favor, usually as the one person on a three-member panel, or in her prior career accordingly. So I don't think we're going to be too happy with that, because we have an extreme danger that the American public is facing toward their family. And you cannot take the fact that she looks like the pop culture choice of the moment, the boutique choice of the moment, a woman of color, black woman, and get her just because of that, because I think there are quite a few black female appellate judges who would be much better for the country that were overlooked.
You know, Judge,
so I'll just say that I'm not happy with the choice.
With 8 minutes left, this is an interesting thing, because I would imagine most people would agree with you that we should not choose our nominees, our political choices, because of skin color or gender, race. But left up to our own devices, for whatever reason, we don't choose those people. 46 presidents, never a woman. I think here in Ohio, we've never had a female governor. We're not exactly a conservative. We're more conservative than we were, but we voted for Obama twice and voted for Trump twice. In the town I live in, we've never had a female mayor. You would think, just by happenstance, that these things would happen over time. But left up to our own devices in 2022, they don't. Why is that?
Well, let me say this. Human beings are animals. We are higher order primates and therefore mammals. That's not in our DNA. And I know few men of my generation or the generation under me that would follow a woman into Compton. The newest bunch, they might, apparently. I know few women on my generation who want a woman in charge. And I have, over the 50 years I've been involved in the practice or adjudication of law, I have had client after client tell me of the misery, female client tell me of the misery of working for a female boss, and they all say never, ever in life again will they do that. And they cite their own proclivities and outlooks in life. Now, there are women who can exercise the managemental function. It's just that, like everybody else, the masculine component included, we have had a very large and long-lasting drought of competent leadership in this country. The idiots we've had running things are showing some of the most manifest incompetence I've ever seen in my 75 years of life. It's just an absolute disgrace. We do not vet our candidates. We do not investigate what they're up to. We do not demand excellence. We take clowns who aren't even qualified to run a dog pound and put them in charge of things. And that spills over into the female side of things as well. So I am very much against getting someone just because they have a race, color, national origin, or gender identification for anything. I don't care who the hell you are, if you can deliver justice and equity and you're sitting on the bench and you have some comprehension about the practice and application of law and wise wisdom and experience in the world, so you know when and where something has to be applied and what that ought to be. I want somebody who can manage a governmental entity wisely, effectively, and with some long experience in ways of the world and in the mechanics and ins and outs of how a political, social, economic process works, who have some vision, have some integrity, for goodness sakes, who don't have a hidden agenda, and who actually have competence in doing what they're doing. Now, I do have, by dint of the things that I've done in life, a lot of personal acquaintances of people who are in these positions, and some of them are not people that I would select. I know others who are not involved in these things who are much better, but we don't have them. And I know how news media has a proclivity to sit there and harp and propagandize on certain things that have absolutely nothing to do with what somebody does when they're in office. I know that I have seen over the last 35 years, mainstream media morph into tabloid journalism. It's the way they handle things. I saw CNN almost go bankrupt in the late 80s until they had that Iraq problem, Gulf War I, and then everybody chimed in to see what was going on and watch a cruise missile fly past the sixth floor window of the reporter. I saw that. And I also saw when they got through that there was not 60 minutes worth of news, let alone 24 hours worth of solid news going on in the world. And we started getting talking heads we started getting the news morphing into ongoing editorialization, and we started finding that big, dumb foxes and idiots, little pansies getting in there that had no connection with the world, who started talking ridiculous nonsense as though it were news. We don't have what we used to have, Walter Cronkites and Ed Bradleys and Murrays and stuff, who were walking encyclopedias, who had put themselves in positions where they got shot at and their lives were on the line. We have little pampered poodles who know more about their shade of MAC makeup than they do about what's going on in the world, and who read copy scrolling across the lens of the camera so only they can see it. It's written by some little 23-year-old pansies who have no experience in life, where our reporters have changed from guys that hung out at the bars and the pubs, could swing down on the docks and survive and be part of what was going on, to some little creatures who sit there on leather-covered couches in five-star hotel bars and sipping wine and nibbling crackers and cheese, pontificating about what you think might be going on in the real world. See, we aren't getting what we demand, and there is a long tradition in America about our system as one where we get the representation we deserve. And right now, we are not on our J-O-Bs, and we need the TCB take care of our business and put some people in office who will make these selections that are appropriate and have the good sense to operate the government. Now, I don't like Joe Biden. I'll make a confession. 1972, when I was doing an intern thing at a D.C. think tank, I happened to be in Delaware, and I heard that low-down scoundrel give one of the most racist, derogatory speeches I've ever heard in my life, and I've heard a whole bunch of them. Sitting on the podium with him was George Wallace, Strom Thurmond, James O. Eastland, Byrd, and it was just absolutely ridiculous what he had to say about black folk, calling them Negroes when we had long been past that point, how he knew us and how he was going to put us in zoos because we made the streets and the jungles, and how black children would turn a school into a jungle, and how he was proud of Delaware's slave background. Now, I know people reform, but he hasn't. And I know the criminal justice system on the federal level is a farce now because of what he and Eastland did, not in 1994, but in 1977, 79, 81, 87, 91, and 94. And we have got a charade masquerading as criminal justice for the United States of America, thanks to him and a few others.
Judge?
So, no, I don't like it.
Judge, I regret we are out of time, but I want you to come back as soon as possible because I'd love to continue this conversation because I think it's important to have.
Yes, thank you. I want America to remain great.
Thank you,
Judge. I'm not taking that from Trump, but it needs to remain on top in a decent nation instead of one corrupted by licentiousness and depravity.
Judge,
we need to stick firm with our principles if we need to push what we ought to do, not what we could do.
The one and only Judge Joe Brown. Thank you, Judge.
What an interesting day. For this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Adam Media and Adam the Computer Guy are a proud supporter